I'm Cindy Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Donald Trump has signed an executive order imposing sanctions on the International Criminal Court, accusing the court of illegitimate and baseless actions against Israel. In November, the ICC issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his then Defence Minister Yoav Gallant. The executive order was signed as Netanyahu remains in Washington following his meeting with Trump earlier this week. I'm joined now by Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, Israel is not a party to the ICC, nor is the United States. So what difference does this actually make?
It depends entirely what the United States tries to do. You're absolutely right about that. There are 120 countries that are signed up to the Rome Statute. It goes back over 20 years. And essentially, as you say, neither the United States nor Israel is party to it. They've just decided not to. Whereas all the 120 countries have it sort of written into their own laws. So it has a considerable status. And those countries include most Western allies of the United States. It depends really on what Trump does next. I mean, if he goes full tilt for this, so that essentially Americans who are in any way involved with helping the court, either directly or indirectly, could be penalized, then that becomes a hugely serious matter. He may well try to do this because I think we're seeing the rate of change within the Trump administration is so fast that it's basically taking people's breath away. But for the moment, we don't know. It's a significant issue, of course, in that Trump is really saying that, you know, don't consider that we are in any way subject to world opinion. And if you can say the world opinion is represented partly by the International Criminal Court, then obviously that would be one way he could take it. So I think we're really waiting to see what the United States does. So far, it is symbolic. But if it goes much beyond that, then I think there will be quite a crisis in relation to the ICC itself and its status, because I think they would doubt where they can operate if the full force of the United States, with all its links, business as well as others, was directed against the court, then the court will be in trouble.
Even though the United States is not party to the court and has criticized the court, Biden also criticized the court. So it's not just Donald Trump, although he is the one who's acting upon that criticism. Now, the question of sanctioning individual members of the court, they could be from Africa, from Western Europe, from wherever, judges on the court, lawyers in the court. I mean, the sanction would be, presumably, you can't get into the United States. That's the only sanction that he could possibly operate against those kind of individuals.
Against the individuals, probably. But on the other hand, against companies that are run by individuals, companies which have contracts with the ICC, it's not clear what he could do. I mean, there will almost certainly be many American companies involved in the routine operation of the court in the sense of providing email and other services. So it goes pretty wide. It's certainly the individuals could be penalized. And obviously, if there are Americans involved at a senior level, a legal level, even though the United States isn't part of the court, isn't a member of the court, people could have been taken on individually, you know, top lawyers from the United States. I don't know how many there are or what their status would be, but they could be hit directly. So in other words, United States could make the work of the court really pretty difficult. But if it went really far and was starting to penalize any organization that was linked to the court, then that would be really something new. And you would not expect that to happen. But I think people are being really surprised at how fast the Trump administration is moving. I mean, look, it looks like the U.S. aid program, which is a huge program, the world's largest, is just being virtually closed down almost overnight. And so we're seeing that Musk in particular is running a coach and horses through elements of that major international body, major American body with an international role. So we're in strange times, and I wouldn't put it past the Trump administration to go further than we would expect.
Now, do you see this as some broad strategic plan to kind of dismantle the current world order and the way that the world has been doing business, whether it's through the Paris Accord on climate change, the WHO on medical matters, now the International Criminal Court, that America decides that it is the arbiter of pretty much everything that goes on around the world?
I think there's an element of that, and one must go back to remember that, you know, 30 years ago, we've been here before. Back in, what was it, 1997, I think, we had the Project for the New American Century, which was put over by the neoconservatives, who were not that prominent politically at the time, because, of course, it was a Democrat government in power. But when George Bush came in, it changed dramatically. And you had this whole idea that the United States should not be bound by international agreements unless they genuinely were useful to it. So then it came out of the Paris Accords. It was against setting up of the International Criminal Court in 2002 and many other examples. So we've been here before. The issue here is, does Trump go much further? And that's where your question, you know, top, absolutely spot on question, if I may say so, is so key. We don't know what Trump really wants. We don't even know whether he himself has a very clear idea of where he wants. And I think this is where we come back to the people around him, the ideologues and others who believe that the United States is the world's great power and must remind people. But the curious thing here is, of course, it also wants to be cautious about getting involved in foreign actions, foreign wars.
And if you are the world's greatest power, and China has designs on that particular title, you will be active everywhere with your soft power, whether it's China investing in African countries and doing deals on mineral exploration in exchange for help, the kind of aid that USAID had been supplying.
Yes,
if you pull all those tentacles back and you really cease to be the world power, no matter what you say from Washington.
Well, that's the key thing. And I mean, the World Health Organization and USAID are examples of that. WHO is a major body which plays a very important role. It has its faults, but we'd be lost without it. And USAID, I mean, yes, it does have, people always say it has something of a neo-imperial role because it doesn't do things just for the good of them's sake. But some people would argue that a lot of the work it does is actually good. But where I would agree with you thoroughly is that if you actually divest from these bodies, you're actually losing influence worldwide. But I think Trump and people around him just don't see it that way. It's different from the late 1990s when people talked about the United States being going to run a benign imperium, that the world would be happier and more peaceful under our tutelage. This time, basically, Trump wants to disengage from much of the world, but still retain the United States as the leading power. And there's a contradiction there, which I think hasn't been explored by many analysts, but is there for the opening, certainly.
There are two approaches to reform, and pretty much everyone, even the union representing some of those federal workers who've been offered 8 months' pay in exchange for giving up the security of a federal job, even the union is saying, yes, well, there might be some fat in there. You know, there could be 10% of the employees who could be done without in some way. But that might be the proper way to reform, you know, do it steadily, slowly, examine each job and each activity and see whether it is worthwhile. And as Marco Rubio puts it, you know, is designed to pursue the American policies abroad. And then there's the Musk way, which is dismantle everything and start rebuilding from the bottom with, of course, Musk or Trump people in key positions. Two different approaches, the former probably the more rational.
I would certainly agree, but the point is rationality doesn't fully come into it at present. But yes, it's absolutely true. The pace at which Musk is working, I think, is astonishing people right across the board. And it is really taking everything down and then possibly, to some extent, rebuilding. I think with the USAID, many thousands of jobs they want to go. And I think they want to retain a few hundred in a very restricted program, which, of course, costs infinitely less than they're currently spending. And one has to remember, I think, as well as this whole feel of Trump really being against the existing system, he also is very keen to support further tax changes and further tax easing for the richer sectors of society. The whole Trump idea is essentially the people who really do have the power, the more wealthy people, are the right people be seeing the way for the United States. And that, I think, is one of the roots of the problems we have at the moment.
Now, Elon Musk says, and I think it's been diagnosed quite clearly, that he has Asperger's syndrome. We know that Trump is obviously a narcissist. So you've got two people at the levers of power in Washington who have no empathy. And it's quite worrying because they cannot put themselves in anyone else's shoes.
I think to use the term quite worrying, Pat, is an understatement. Yes, I think this is what people are realizing. Perhaps they should have realized it early. We are in very different times. And there are also the questions. You've got to be very careful about the gossip, about whether to some extent Trump himself may be having difficulties in remaining sort of rational in the normal sense. Now, I say it's very easy to succumb to gossip in these circumstances, but there are indications of that at the very least. And what it certainly does mean, to go back to the International Criminal Court, it's going to depend in part on how other countries hold together, particularly in relation to areas where there are very strong areas of agreement. But if you get, you know, major countries with considerable soft power, if you like, really prepared to go there, not their own way, but a different way to Trump's way, and to be really strongly supportive of WHO and the others, then that may be a sign that basically the Trump era will be less significant. And one always has to remember, this may be sort of something odd, is that within the United States system, you're going to have the midterm elections for Congress in, what, less than 2 years' time. And if any major problems develop for the Trump administration, including a perception that the United States is losing status, then again, things may become much more fluid than we expect.
The last question is really about international law, I suppose, and what impact the UN can have on anything these days. They've indicated, Israel has, that after the conflict is over in Gaza, they will hand over Gaza to the United States. It is not theirs to hand over.
No, it isn't. Absolutely not. And you have all this talk about what the Israeli Defense Forces are doing at present of actually making it easier for people to leave Gaza. Now, you could agree to people leaving Gaza if they are able to go to other parts of Israel, from where in 80% of cases their families actually came from as refugees. But the idea that they're just going to kick people out into Egypt or Jordan, well, I think both of those countries will be very much concerned at that. But as an indication of what I think Israel feels it can do, or rather, let's be specific, the Netanyahu government feels it can do with Trump in the White House. And that, I think, is going to be a major area for great difficulty in the international community in the coming months.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.